This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass. These are the themes we are exploring. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it, that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. Well, today's episode was a heck of a lot of fun to put together. We decided as a team that as all of you were going to be welcoming in 2019, Happy New Year, everyone, by the way, that we wanted to lay down our version and interpretation of health and wellness trends that we see and we are forecasting for 2019. We got into biohacking, we got into food, we talked about concepts like mindfulness, and what we really did for all of the 2019 trends that we are forecasting for this year is we gave you our take on them. The good, the bad, the ugly, and the take home of each of the things that we think are going to be front and center in the health and wellness industry and in your lives over the upcoming year. My team is quite incredible and really amazing, and I'm super excited that you have the chance to hear from all of them for the first time ever, all in one episode. We had a ton of fun recording this, maybe a little bit too much fun, and we're going to be doing this for you guys a lot more in the upcoming months. So all the best to you. I hope this has been an incredible holiday season and enjoy this special edition of the Entrepology Podcast. Okay, so we have a really special podcast episode today, and I am joined by our entire team from Entrepology Performance Labs. We've got
Heather Allen.
Yasher Khosrowshahi.
Anita Davis.
And what we're going to talk to you guys about today are some of the top trends that we have seen in practice, what we think is working, and our take on that as high performers. So we've made a list as a team of some of the things that we are seeing. And what we really want for you guys is to get a sense of what are some of these top ideas that high performers are putting into action in their own lives, and how can we do it in a healthy and sustainable manner. So we're going to kick off our trend list with the concept of biohacking. And biohacking is a term that some of you will be very familiar with, and others are going, I've never heard that term before. And so if I throw this out to the team, maybe I'll ask Yasher, how would you define biohacking?
I guess there's many ways to define it, but simply put is taking the time to understand how your personal biology works so that you can show up to life in a more productive and engaged manner. That would be my most simplest definition of that. And there are many psychological, physiological, and technological tools that can help you understand that personal biology.
Okay, and so I'll throw this back at anyone who wants to tackle it. What are some of your favorite ways of actually assessing when we're talking about biohacking? What are some of the coolest things that you have seen in terms of being able to actually understand what's going on with respect to someone's health? And not just you as a clinician, but like you as someone who's interested in technology and gadgets. So like a perfect example would be an Apple Watch is like a really cool, most simplistic bio tool or biohacking tool that we could talk about. There's all sorts of apps on it. Now they have a new one that's going to measure your heart rate. You can have an ECG in your pocket. Like it'll measure sleep. These are all biohacking assessments. But have you guys seen some pretty cool biohacking assessment tools with your patients?
Well, I am using the headband to look at your brain waves and playing around with meditation and seeing how I can, what my brain looks like in a meditative state. Am I getting into a meditative state? I don't know. I don't know what my brain looks like. So I love seeing the data on that and playing around with that. That's kind of a new thing for me. So I'm having fun with that. And the new headband that's coming out, I'm not even promoting anything from this company right now, but oh, it also has heart rate variability, not just your brain waves, and breath rate. And I think my husband and I are very interested in seeing what's happening that way and biohacking our physiology in that way.
What was interesting is I had Ariel, who's the CEO of Muse, on the podcast earlier this year, and Anita's talking about the new Muse headband. And I asked her, like, offline before we started, I said, can we talk about what happens to people's heart rate variability when they are meditating? And wouldn't it be cool if that was in the Muse headband? And then she just went silent. She's like, let's not talk about that at all. And I was like, oh, yes, that means we've got something super cool in the pipeline. And it's amazing. And we can get into, and we've put later down on our trend list, we were talking a little bit about meditation. And another really cool biohacking tool that I know a lot of my friends are wearing, I haven't gotten mine yet, is the Oura Ring. And the Oura Ring is a heart rate variability monitor that you wear right on your hand. And it's really amazing because you can get real time feedback with respect to heart rate and heart rate variability. And it tracks a few other things, but I can't tell you what those are right now because I don't have mine yet. But they're super stylish and they're small and you don't have to necessarily wear it on your wrist. So it's a really neat tool. And we've got some really cool biohacking tools that we're going to look at bringing into the clinic starting in the new year. And we're going to keep you guys abreast of those. Does anyone else on the team here have anything that they want to add in terms of really cool assessment tools that you guys have seen in terms of biohacking?
So I think one of the tech tools that I think is really cool, and it's not as like cutting edge as maybe some of the other ones that you guys have mentioned, but it's just like the blue blocking glasses as being something that's just so easily accessible for people. Also, I think just our exposure to light is really interesting. We're spending a lot of time indoors, especially in North America. We don't have a lot of sunlight. So our exposure to junky light and how that actually affects our biology is really interesting to me. I've been hearing about this new trendy infrared light system that people are getting. The Juve, yes, which I think is really, really cool. So just kind of really low grade ways that we can reduce our exposure to junky light, and then maybe some upgraded versions of that are really interesting to me in 2019.
Yeah, that's such a great point. You know, I think the biohacking glasses are really neat because the way that they work is they prevent that penetration of blue light past the time of day when we would normally have blue light wouldn't necessarily be hitting the back of the eye or hitting the retina. And the idea there is that by blocking those blue rays in the evening, we're able to maximize our melatonin production. And if melatonin receives blue rays of light at night, so from your television or your computer, then what it tells the brain is, oh, it's still bright and sunny out. We're not going to need melatonin for a few hours. So we have this epidemic of sleep issues. So you're right. Like, this is a really simple, low-tech way of being able to address a really common problem in today's society. I feel like we could do a whole episode on biohacking tools and the utilization of light. Another really great point, the red light from the Juve is amazing at helping to build mitochondria. And these are all really cool examples of how do we impact health without supplements, which is one thing people are always looking for. How do we start to influence health without having to take more pills? I want to throw out to the team, we've talked about a few of the things we love about these biohacking tools. Can we have some cautions for people as well? Because it's so easy with any of these trends to get in drinking the Kool-Aid, don't drink Kool-Aid, but drinking the proverbial Kool-Aid, and we get kind of lost. So do you have some cautions for people in terms of engaging in biohacking?
I just think sometimes you can overwhelm yourself with all the data, and I like to change habits like one or two things at a time because it's sustainable for me, and then I can really get impact. So, you know, I wouldn't be doing four biohacking tools at once and then getting the data and then just not doing anything with them. So that's why I'm focusing on meditation for this year and doing, okay, let's hack the brain waves in that way and establish calm and parasympathetic mode and not trying to do too many things at once because then the data can be lost and we're already busy people, right?
Going off of what you just said is having an idea of the purpose of all of this. Why are we actually even aggregating all of this data and what's the point to all of this? So if we can attach meaningful insights for how we want to, again, show up to our challenges in life, and these tools help us do that, then we can take some selective tools and build off of them, and the foundation will be stronger. And as the time goes by, the years go by, we can keep building our knowledge base up in this area. But without that deep understanding of why we're doing this kind of stuff and how this helps us become a better athlete, human, CEO, mother, father, community member, whatever, it just, again, it becomes a thing to do because everyone else is doing it.
I love that idea about setting your intention and goal setting, so you can use these tools for a reason, and then you can just accomplish all of your entrepreneurial goals for the year or for the month or whatever it is. But setting that intention is so important, and then you can use these tools for a purpose. And it's not just like fun gadgets that you get for Christmas and then a few months later they just kind of go to your kids.
Yeah, the dopamine high of the new gadget is totally real, but it's like sugar. You crash really hard. And my one caution with all of these tools is, and with any of these things, is they shouldn't be a substitute for you actually getting to know your own body. So it's I have women who I ask them, you know, tell me about your menstrual cycle, and they pull out their app, which is a really important first step. But what I really want you to be able to do is like feel it. I want you to know what that feels like. I want you to know what a premenstrual phase feels like for you. I want you to be able to describe these things without this prompt of technology. So I think they're an incredible segue. But back to this concept of intention, I think the intention behind them is really to help you reach a point where you're performing on your own. You don't necessarily need all of these tools to be able to move forward. But I think the word intention is a really great segue into our second trend. And our second trend for 2019 is the idea and concept of gratitude. And there are gratitude journals, and there are gratitude hashtags, and there is gratitude all over the place. But there's actually something super powerful about not just talking about gratitude, but deeply engaging in gratitude and feeling gratitude right down to the level of your cells. And I'm going to pass this first to Yasher, because I want him to talk a little bit about what happens when we actually move into a state of genuine gratitude, not Instagram gratitude, but genuine gratitude. What happens to us physiologically? Why is this such a powerful item, an idea to include in our health?
Simply put, when we're in a state of gratitude, we're not in a state of fear. We're in a state of gratitude. We're not in a state of anger. We're in gratitude. We're not in a state of anxiety. All of the emotions or states that often drive our day when we're busy, active people. So anyone who wants to understand or feel what it is to be in a parasympathetic or a rest and digest state, practicing gratitude is a great way of starting to experience that in a low-tech way. The challenge with gratitude, well, let me start here. If someone doesn't go through their day taking moments to be grateful or acknowledge what is going well, then sure, simply taking a moment and looking outside and saying, you know, the sunlight beaming into my room is something that's really nice. That's a really great place to start. But I like going a little bit deeper with the people I work with. And I like saying that if we go deeper, we're injecting gratitude with a shot of steroids. And that is really asking, why do we care about that sunlight coming through our window? Or why do we care about the dog that, you know, jumps in our lap and licks our face when we come in from work? Or why do we care when our kids look at us and smile, you know, asking the deeper question of why are we grateful for these specific moments? And then tying that back into an understanding of who we're trying to show up as in this world. So a simple example that a lot of my patients use is they'll say they're grateful for the smile that the barista gave them when they handed them the coffee. And then I'll ask them, so why do you care about that? And they'll say, well, because it's very nice. And I said, well, who cares about being nice? And we'll keep playing this game until they recognize that it's how they like showing up to this world. It's they want to be, the type of person that smiles at others or that's nice to others. And then by seeing that in somebody else, we have a sense of community. We have a sense of connection. We also have a deeper understanding of how we like to show up to this world as well. And I think that's when gratitude becomes a lot more engaging and a lot more powerful than just simply listing, you know, mom, dad, dog, and grass every day, the same list over and over.
Okay, trend number three, which also we're segueing these really well, is transparency. And it was interesting because where this item came up on our list was it came up in the sentence of, oh, this thing we're seeing on Instagram is that people are getting more real and they're being more transparent. And I actually think that I think that's true. And I think that's one of the things that social media has the potential to do is there's two ways you can view it. You can view the artificialness of social media and people's desperate attempts to project an idea on social media. Or you can find those people who are finding this place of courage and they're just being totally honest about what it is that they want to put out into the world. And there's power to transparency. And I will maybe also say with that goes vulnerability. Like genuine transparency requires that we couple it with vulnerability. And it is a truly powerful healing tool when we can go to that place where we are honest, not just with the world and not just with social media, but with ourselves, when we have that transparency and that vulnerability with ourselves, because it allows us to step up in a different way. What are you guys observing with your patients and in the world with respect to this idea of transparency and vulnerability?
I think a lot of the time I see people come into the clinic, and myself as a nutritionist, I get a lot of people that are really confused or don't know where to start or very overwhelmed with how they should be living a healthy lifestyle. I feel like the wellness space has gotten to this, it's very intense. It's like very saturated. There's a lot of messaging going on there. There's a lot of really great information. And I love that people are getting into wellness as a trend. But I find that a lot of people are coming in overwhelmed and they don't know how to implement. And they're trying to live up to this Instagrammable standards of health and wellness. This could be from like picture perfect meal prepping every single week. Well, that doesn't really apply to a mom of three who works full time or is the CEO or performing at really high levels. So I think one of the things that I take away from that is that in my job, I'm basically managing people's expectations on what is real and what is someone's highlight reel and trying to fit those people in to something that like really actually works for them. So as a nutritionist, I find that a lot of the times I have so many people like almost scared to open up to me about like what they had for lunch today. And I will say that I have no judgments as I just want people to get real with what it is that they need to be doing, what's realistic for them to actually execute on. And like if you had the cheeseburger, you had the cheeseburger. It doesn't, I feel like that's totally, you can integrate that into your lifestyle. So I feel like this keeping up with the Joneses or the Instagram highlight reel of life is really nice to see that it's being broken down and people are getting really transparent.
Heather, where should we go for a really good cheeseburger?
I'm the type of person that's like all about quality. So for me, Megan, that's a tough question. The last cheeseburger that I had that was really delicious. Actually, Allen's on the Danforth is really, really good. Fresh ground, like good quality, and it makes it so worth it. So for me, I'm the type of person that's like quality over, it will cure all of my cravings.
Oh, you got to suggest.
No Bull Burger is on Kingston Road. Yes. They're not paying me.
Yash, you have a burger joint?
Mr. Jam?
No.
And that, my friends, is what we call transparency. Okay, trend number four are meditation studios. So more and more, we're seeing these opportunities to go to a place to meditate. And we've had a few podcasts this year where we've talked about meditation. And there's two types of feedback that I get on these podcasts. Either, that was so amazing, that guest was really great, I loved it. Or I couldn't get through the first 5 minutes, which is basically, I think, summarizes how most people feel about meditation. They're either like, I'm in it and I'm going deep, or I can't get through the first 5 minutes. But the cool thing I think about a meditation studio that I have never, ever attended myself, so let me be fully transparent in that, is that there's an entire experience that we are building into it. There's an accountability thing because you're paying. There's an entire atmosphere. There are people in the room, so it's really hard for you to get up and walk out. There are facilitators. Like, there's a lot of reasons why it's an interesting way to segue into the exploration of meditation. And this is a trend that we are seeing both here in Toronto, really across North America. And I'm curious from the rest of my team here, have any of you guys actually tried out either a meditation studio or the emerging trend of brain gyms? So we got a solid negative around the room, but we're all in agreement as we got to this trend. We're like, oh yeah, that's a really great trend. Okay. So here's the challenge that I'm putting out to Team Anthropology is I think we should all as a team head down to meditation studio. And we actually collectively experienced a teacher from a meditation studio. And that was one of the teachers from a home studio out in the West End of Toronto. And they were gracious enough to come and attend our event, Impact Lives. And we did a meditation, which wasn't necessarily meant to bring us down, and it didn't. We intentionally put this meditation at the front of the day to be really uplifting and to get our cells and our body in a place where we were open and receptive to new ideas. And they totally nailed it. They were amazing. So I think we're going to have to head down as a team, and we're going to have to try that. We're going to try that out. Yeah, Yasha's got something to say.
Just a quick plug for people who want to meditate but are always scared and intimidated by the idea of meditation, or what I hear actually more often is, I just can't meditate. Anytime and every time your mind wanders to something outside of whatever you're focusing on, whether it be a picture of your child or your breath or the sensation of your feet on the ground, and you bring it back to that one point of focus, that is meditation. So if you do that 1,000 times in a minute, congratulations, you just did 1,000 reps. So that's the actual exercise. The other thing I would say is all the gurus will tell you to do it, you know, however many minutes in a day, but why not just start for 1 minute each day and just do that 1 minute and do your very best of that 1 minute, because everyone has a minute. I often joke with my patients again and say, just go to the washroom more often. There's your minute, right? So you can just do your breathing in that situation. So if you strip away the expectation that you have to reach your nirvana or somehow you're, you know, enlightened in that process of meditation, if you strip away the myth that every time your brain goes somewhere else, you're not meditating, which you are. And if you strip away the idea that you need hours and hours of meditation, then you really just become familiar with what it feels like to be there with yourself. And I think that ties back into the whole idea of transparency. Most often we struggle to be transparent with others because we're not willing to be transparent with ourselves and the experience of sitting in that silence or the solitude within ourselves. And so that would be my plug for people who just want to get into it just a little bit.
Beautifully said once again. One of the things that has come up for me lately is...
That's why we got you here, just to compliment me. Thank you.
I'm Yasher's tire pumper here, professional, available for hire. One of the things that I've been doing lately, which has been kind of a game changer, is when I find myself caught up in frantic energy or chaos in my mind, what I do is I ask myself, am I blank? And I just ask myself, am I basically doing what I'm doing? So when I'm in the shower and I'm thinking about all the things that I need to do for the day and my mind is racing a million times a minute and I get to that state, that's a trigger for me to ask myself, am I in the shower? And it just makes me breathe, just focus on doing exactly what I'm doing. If I'm walking down the street and those thoughts kind of come up again and they're not really serving me and I'm not really being proactive about them, I take a minute, I take a breath, and I say, am I walking down the street? And it always kind of puts a smile on my face because, yes, I am walking down the street, and it just refocuses my mind as to where I'm at.
Very well said.
You're hired.
I have so much gratitude. And if you want to go a little deeper on meditation and maybe previously skipped over it, on December 18th, episode 95 with Susie Yeloff-Schwartz, she took me through a very brief meditation in that episode, and she called it the square of four. Actually, that's how I remember it. I have no idea what she called it, but it was really powerful for me. So she said to me, she was like, I want you to think of something really stressful, and we're going through a renovation right now. And so I totally fixated on my house wrapped in blue plastic and all the people around. And she's like, okay, so close your eyes and just go to that spot. And then she said, take a breath in for a count of four and hold it for a count of four and let it out for a count of four and then hold it being out for a count of four. And she's like, think about your renovation. And I couldn't. I had gone away from that stress. And that's the point of meditation right there, is you physiologically disengage yourself from what is applying pressure on your life. And so that was really cool because that was 16 seconds of my life that enabled me to disengage. And that was all it took for me to realize that it's sometimes these things that are stressing us out are really just fixations in our own mind. And that's the idea of meditation, is you can separate yourself from what it is that we are actually often creating for ourselves. Because the problem with creating these stresses and having these ongoing stresses, it can lead to physiological burnout. And as naturopathic doctors and nutritionists, we have a term or a condition that we describe often with patients, and that's called adrenal fatigue. And adrenal fatigue is so epidemic in our society that it is driving trend number 5, which is the idea of adaptogens and elixirs. So when you go into some of these really cool, trendy little coffee shops, we've got a great one at the end of our street, Nut Bar. They've got all of these different elixirs, and they've got all these adaptogens that they will add into your teas or your coffees. It's ironic when it goes in your coffee or into your smoothie or wherever it happens to be. And the idea with adaptogens in general as botanicals is that they really help to modulate the functionality of the adrenal glands. And the adrenal glands are these little organs. They sit on top of your kidneys, and they modulate cortisol. And cortisol is a long-term stress hormone. And for all of us, our cortisol and our cortisol patterns are challenged because our lifestyle in today's current day and age is more stressful than we've ever experienced before. So while we used to have these intense bursts of stress, maybe we were living in the middle of some nomadic landscape and the weather changed and we had to pick up as a group and we left and we would move and our cortisol levels would be high for that period of time. And then we'd plant ourselves down again and we would find our rhythm and our cortisol levels would drop. And we evolved like this for hundreds of years. And then there was this thing that happened in the last 20 years called the BlackBerry and then the iPhone. And what happens is the stress of picking up your entire tribe and moving or picking up your entire village and engaging in war and then rebuilding, those types of intense stresses, but usually what would find resolution, were now happening every single day, day in and day out, because your cells can't see outside your body. So they can't differentiate, oh gosh, we're in a state of war or transport, or my boss is emailing me. And so our poor little adrenal glands are constantly being messaged to put us into a state of stress, and we are stressed. And so we are seeing more and more this opportunity to add adaptogens to our tea. So what do we think, team? Are adaptogens something that we should collectively be adding to our tea or coffee because we are these hyper-stressed societies? Or are we band-aiding the solution? Or are they probably not doing much at all?
You know me. I love me some adaptogens. This is why the mic went to me. I think it's funny the trend in the coffee bars right now, because there's also an awesome one down the street from me. But I kind of find it funny that the one, you know, the elixir that you put in your coffee is like a one-time shot. And is it going to do anything with that dose one time only? Is it just a stimulant, basically? It's definitely not going to do anything. I think the coffee will mask your adaptogens. But having an adaptogen shot, I mean, there are some adaptogens and herbs that are really great for acute stimulation and memory and focus. Rhodiola comes to mind. I really like my rhodiola. Instead of a second coffee a day, I'll just drop a little, like 2 mils of rhodiola at my energy dip. And I love it because it's safe in breastfeeding. And so it's like for all my working moms going back to work, feeling like, oh, I need this extra booster. I'm not going to be good enough performing at work. I kind of go to that one. But a lot of them are very balancing and regulating herbs, and you need to take them daily to affect your cortisol rhythms, because we're talking about long-term performance, right? And boosting your energy, not just for, you know, like the 5-hour energy from like the B vitamin shots that you can buy in the drugstore right now, or a coffee. We're just talking about healing your adrenal glands from a deeper level. And adaptogens work in not just on the cortisol level, but they work in multiple ways to help your body resist stress. And they're great for athletes, and they've been studied in performance. There's like some, oh, and there's different ones all over the world. I can just go on about adaptogens. There is like my Russian adaptogens and my Indian adaptogens. And so they're all good for different things, and they all have their own profile that will fit you individually. So I'm always looking at that when I'm looking at my clients and what they're trying to get out of, you know, using an adaptogen or boosting performance and mental clarity and fatigue.
I totally agree with everything that you said. I love adaptogens. I'm everyone's tire pumper today. But I also think that we kind of have to, in addition to like a really good foundation. So I've noticed this trend of like magic dusts and adaptogenic dusts and herbs and stuff, which is awesome, but you can't sprinkle some adaptogenic dust on your burger that's not from Allen's, some like fast food, and expect it to do its work. So I feel like people are still responsible for creating a good foundation of their health
nutrition is always going to be at the forefront for me. And then in addition to that, using adaptogenic herbs and mushrooms and all these wonderful things that Mother Nature's provided us, but you can't out dust a bad diet.
I loved this. I love that we segued from like not feeling good enough though in meditation and because like you said, Heather, the foundation needs to be there, but also why do you feel like you need to boost your performance? Do you feel like you're not good enough? Why do you feel like you need the boost? Is it an actual boost you need, or are you feeling like you are not good enough? Like you don't have any self-compassion, or is it coming from a self-critical place? So we like to talk about that before we start giving you, you know, performance boosters, because we don't want Band-Aid solutions either.
I think that hits the nail on the head. You can't out-supplement a crappy relationship or a job you hate or not getting out in nature or not eating real food. We can't give you enough pills to compensate for those things that are really important and that literally build life. And so if someone, you know, is needing to be on an adaptogen for an extended period of time, it's also something for us as clinicians to step back and go, what else do we actually need to give you in your life? Because if the adaptogen's not moving the needle, then that means the pressure in your system is overpowering the pressure and information that we're providing from that supplement. And it's really important that we get to the root cause of that piece. Okay, one more supplement-y type trend thing for the team, and that is mushrooms. More and more, we've been seeing mushrooms this year. Mushroom tea, mushroom coffee, mushroom pills, mushroom. You can get mushroom just about anything. And the cool thing about mushrooms is that we've known for a very long period of time that there's tremendous healing properties to mushrooms. And I find it interesting that at a time where our planet is literally challenged in the way that it is, that mushrooms are emerging, even energetically, that they are. Mushrooms are something historically that come to light in a forest or in soil when the soil itself is in need of repair. And one would argue we've got a certain humanity that is in need of repair. I didn't think I was going to go there, but we're here. And so we're seeing this trend of mushrooms. And I think there's some real power to mushrooms. So I'm certainly using them in practice and encouraging a lot of my patients to add them to their teas or coffees. We can use reishi to calm down the nervous system. We can use shaga as an adaptogen, speaking of, as an immune support. We can look at lion's mane in terms of brain health. How are you guys leveraging and utilizing or seeing mushrooms in your practices?
I think for me, energetically, I'm so drawn to mushrooms. I think they're so fascinating. And I feel like that's part of kind of what we do at Anthropology Labs, is that we're looking to connect people with their body and what really feels good and tapping into intuition. So for me, mushrooms are totally my jam. I think lion's mane is like my spirit mushroom. I love them. And I feel like there's so much more for us to learn about them. I think that they're super useful, but whenever something becomes very trendy in the health space, I get a little bit concerned. And I think that mushrooms being something that is just so wise and it has evolved to this point, I'm a little scared for the sustainability of it. And I feel like we need to be educated in terms of how we're using them, how we're maybe foraging them, how we're consuming them with anything. I think consumption needs to be monitored. But outside of that, I love it. I love making teas. I go camping a lot in the summer. And this past summer, I was in my tent and I woke up really early, like 5 a.m. I was like, I must go looking for mushrooms. I was just called to it. And I feel like they're just like the mycelium network is just like this really powerful thing. I found some shaga. I don't advise like not knowing what you're doing and going and foraging mushrooms. But shaga was really, really easy for an entry point mushroom. So I've been enjoying my tea ever since and I love it.
That was really beautifully said. Okay, we're going to jump into our last trend as we emerge into 2019. And that is an idea and mindset. And it is that you are, in fact, enough. And again, it's something we're seeing it on journals. We're hearing people talk about it. It's part of our common vernacular. And how do we as high performers truly embrace this idea that we are enough in our current state, really drive home an opportunity for continuous and ongoing self-compassion but couple that with what I think is an inherent nature for a lot of us in terms of wanting growth and wanting to be challenged. And are these two ideas of I'm enough, but I also really want to encourage and chase growth in my life? Are these two things mutually exclusive? Can we actually have both? How do we reconcile these ideas? Because if we can actually look at ourselves and compassionately say, I am enough, but still commit to the mission that excites us and fuels us, now we have a truly powerful person. Team, thoughts, ideas?
I would describe this idea as a duality of a sane mind. So instead of a duality of an insane mind, it's a duality of a sane mind, meaning, yes, you're wired for amazingness. You have all the technology within yourself to be that version of yourself and express yourself to the fullest. However, it also means that you have to then be willing to face the parts of you that aren't working for you at this moment and be at the edge of your comfort zone and sometimes even beyond that so that you can upgrade your operating system, so that you can tap into the technology, so that you can be that vision of you. And each and every one of us who wants to go on the journey of growing has to understand that, yes, who you are is actually quite perfect in so many ways, but maybe you're not expressing yourself perfectly for the way you want to show up to the task. So that's a learning journey. And so self-compassion really comes in beautifully at this moment because it asks better questions, and it asks you questions like, how would you treat someone who was in a similar situation as you that you cared for deeply? And it asks you, what is one step you can take to expressing that care or that desire to grow as opposed to solving the problems at this one moment? And it asks you, how can I see this challenge as a growth opportunity that can help me see what I'm capable of versus admission to my failures or my lack? So these are the areas in which being enough, but also being growth mindset oriented and wanting more out of life can be very favorable and actually be really exciting and promote a lot of self-love and also community love with the people around you. I think we fall into the trap of saying, I want to be enough, so I have to beat the crap out of myself to get there. But that's not how your nervous system wants to be treated, nor does it respond sustainably well to that type of thinking or behavior.
Well, I think you guys are enough just the way you are. I love our team here at Anthropology Performance Labs. And I normally ask our guests at the end, I say people are going to want to follow up with you. Where can they find out more about what you're up to? And in this case, I'm going to answer on behalf of our team and say that you can find out more about what we are up to by visiting anthropologyperformancelabs.com. And one of the things that's really important to us is that we have a really strong fit with the high-performing individuals who come into our practice and what it is that we are offering. And so any of our practitioners are available to meet with you on a complimentary basis to review our methodology and what your concerns are to make sure that there's a fit. And you can learn a little bit more about how to do that on our website, which is anthropologyperformancelabs.com. So on that note, I want to wish all of you an incredible 2019. I think this year energetically can only get better than 2018. We are poised for growth. There is more good in the world than there are challenges. And when we really tap in and see that, it can fuel all of us on our respective missions. So we collectively want to wish you guys a really happy new year and all the best for 2019. And we will see you in the same place next week.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Anthropology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.